to the first study session of the year. If we could introduce ourselves for the record, please, starting with Mr. Nixon.
Toby Nixon.
John Pascal.
Doreen Marchand.
Penny Sweet.
Jay Arnold.
And Amy Wallen. Thank you very much, Mr. Pascal. Welcome. We're very excited to have you with us this evening. Councilmember Asher is on his way, so let's get started. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. Happy New Year to all of you. So this study session is a little bit different. As you know, I've been going through our City Hall remodel, which is almost complete. And one centerpiece of that was the council's direction to make sure that we had a very welcoming and customer service-focused lobby and service center. And that was one of the first things that was completed, and it's been underway for quite a while. And one of the things we wanted to do tonight is present to the council and to the public kind of how that center works, who the folks are that are behind it, and a little bit of the kinds of questions and things that they resolve on behalf of the public. So we encourage questions if you have any, and we hope you'll enjoy the presentation and I'll learn quite a bit from it. So here to kick us off is Sarah Waters, our customer service lead. Sarah.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. This evening, you will be receiving a presentation on the customer service lobby. It will be a learning experience. Recently, back in October, the staff presented the learning experience to all the other staff that supports the customer service lobby. Staff will present the scope of work that they do in a brief presentation to you. It will be one slide long, approximately 5 minutes per topic. I will begin the presentation with the customer service desk and the customer assistance tracking system that we're currently using. Like Kurt said, Mr. Triplett, I am the customer service program lead. I am the first point of contact as the customers and residents enter City Hall. We greet in direct. We're the meeting check-in for direct meetings for internal and external staff. The desk is staffed by myself as well as 9 volunteers. As of December 2016, 1,290 hours were contributed from our front desk volunteers. We also assist the fire department in handing out fire station keys when the meetings rooms are reserved. We also help the customers with passport check-in and answering questions. We also answer the telephones and direct incoming calls to staff and to the other departments. At this moment, if you do any of you have questions about the customer service desk itself?
We're okay. No. Thank you, Sarah.
If not, I'm going to move on to Mark Young with fire prevention.
Thank you, Sarah. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm Mark Young. I'm the fire marshal. I actually moved on the slide for me. We are located in the annex building, which is just to the west of City Hall. And I appreciate very much Sarah's group and the permit techs that guide the customers to us. We ask that folks call us at 3661. If we're down there, we make a point to answer the phone. We'll answer questions, and we like to do our meetings by appointment, but if we're available and it's quick, we can meet people either up at City Hall or down in our offices. So we're a small group. We're responsible for a lot. There are 5 of us. There's myself and 4 plan review and inspectors and a part-time administrative assistant. We do maintenance inspections for more than 3,000 structures in the city, and each of those structures may have multiple occupancies and multiple fire protection systems that are intended to be inspected in the code every year. We try to get to each of them once every 3 years, and sometimes we struggle with that. One of the things that is it creates a strain for us is development and development review, and so we do, in conjunction with the development services group, we do fire protection systems review and development review, which largely involves fire access, water supply, and what kinds of fire protection systems do we need to require in new structures, and that's kept us quite busy over the last couple of years. Once we determine that certain fire protection systems are required, then we will do a require those in the plans the building department requires. We'll notify the developer and contractors that we need those things. Then our group will review their plans, issue permits, and conduct inspections for them. We also do the operational permits, so hazardous occupancies in the community that are already built, or if people want new hazardous occupancies, things like storage and CO2 have been kind of on our radar. The production of marijuana is a hazardous activity. It's been new for us. And battery systems, there are 26 hazardous operational permits in the fire code, and we issue permits and do inspections for them. Fire prevention is also responsible for fire investigation, so we do cause determination and origin for each fire that occurs in Kirkland. We also do some public education, so we work with the communications manager a lot to issue press releases to communicate fire prevention, fire safety needs in the community. Now, it seems like a lot that we're doing, but we leverage our small group with the operations staff. They, in order for us to get around to all of those inspections in a year, we use nearly 100 firefighters that are out on the streets every day. They're our eyes and ears. They recognize hazards in the course of doing their inspection, but also by doing those inspections, they have the opportunity to understand what might not appear immediately on the surface to be hazardous and identify those things and pass them on to us. We can generally contact the responsible party on that and get them to make corrections within a week or two. If they take more, we can work with them. And if they're not willing to work with us, then we can move them into the code enforcement process utilizing our code enforcement officers in the city. I want to talk just a second about these two photos that I've included with the presentation. One of them, the one on the upper picture there, is a fire that happened about 10 years ago in Totem Lake, and I picked it. It's a part of a series of photos that took place over about 10 minutes as that fire developed prior to us arriving on scene, but it demonstrates some of the things that fire prevention does, that we have access, that there are wide roadways that can accommodate our fire engines. If we had video and we had sound on this, we would hear the fire alarm going on in the background. We would see that police arrived on scene and that they had actually gone in and attempted to put the fire out. You can see a police officer in an earlier photo walking out with a fire extinguisher. Well, that fire extinguisher was there because the fire code required it, and it was in the exit way as the police officer arrived and utilized it. In this case, it wasn't able to put the fire out. The crews got on scene, put up the elevated hose stream, put the fire out in about 10 minutes after arrival on scene. But it's a good demonstration of the things that the fire code requires. If this building was built today in Kirkland, it would require a sprinkler system and might have been put out prior to being, prior to it getting to that point and us using an elevated hose stream to put out. The other photo highlights, and that's an actual photo taken from the building that burned in downtown Bothell over the summer, and that was a building under construction. And so we take our experience in construction inspection and operational inspection, our experience in operations of putting out fires, and we do code development in addition to all these other things we've talked about. And one thing that we proactively did this year in the code review cycle was to put in some specific requirements for buildings under construction so that we can minimize the impact of this kind of fire, to prevent it up front, to keep it from happening, but the things that we put in the code allow us to have a chance to put a fire out like this. Buildings under construction are incredibly vulnerable to fire because none of the systems are in place. The sprinkler systems aren't in place. The detection systems aren't there. The compartmentation that's in the walls and the gypsum wallboard and the exterior treatments just isn't there, and they can burn really fast and rapidly. So that's one of the things that I'm pretty proud of that we did over the summer was our code development activity. So It's a big mission. We leverage our partners in development review and operations folks, code enforcement, and we by and large are successful. That's the conclusion of my presentation. Cliff Jones is up next to talk about the role of plumbing technicians.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Good evening, Mayor, Council members, City managers. My name is Cliff Jones. I'm a permit technician, and I work in the building department. Our permit technician work group is one of several work groups that comprise our development services team, and we have six total permit technicians, and we split those six up to provide front counter coverage and to process electronic permits at the workstations behind the front counters. In 2016, we processed 6,948 permits through the building department, and that's a total of about 550 permits a month. It's quite a lot of activity in the city. I'm sure you've seen that driving around. You see all the growth, all the development. Permit technicians serve as the first point of contact for development services customers. And it's really important that when customers come in, we try to get as much information from them as we can to be able to assist them and direct them to the best staff member or work group to help them with their needs. We answer permitting related questions, something along the likes of, the permitting process and what it costs to take out a permit. We process applications and invoice customers for permit intake or issuance, and we route electronic applications for completeness, which is when we send applications that come in electronically to the various departments or work groups to determine whether we have enough information to accept an application and invoice them for payment. We also process electronic payments and revisions and financial reports that we relay over to our finance department and our cashiering. And some of the basic questions that we get commonly are, do I need a permit? How much a permit is, as I alluded to earlier. Typically, we'll get a lot of customers coming in asking, what's going on next door at my neighbor's property? Our system, our permitting system, actually gives us is one of the tools that we use to give the information to the customers and hopefully answer their questions or their concerns. We also get a lot of questions about, can I remove a tree? And Kirkland, being a Tree City USA city, is very concerned about that. Something we take seriously. Permit technicians don't really aren't really involved in that at this point. We are in the process of cross-training with our assistant planners to try and build that knowledge so we can answer those questions without having to unnecessarily bounce a customer to another work group or another staff member. That's one of our goals, is to kind of try and streamline our customer service for the customers. We also get a lot of questions typically about, can I subdivide a short plat or short plot a lot? I just purchase a property and I want to know what I can do with it. We usually defer those questions to our assistant planners. That's more their forte, and we're cross training to try and build that knowledge up within our work group, and hopefully we'll be able to assume some of that task. We also plan to cross train with our public works department to try and build the public works knowledge base up with our permit technicians so again we can answer questions without having to bounce off to another staff member if possible. But that's about it for what I have for permit technicians. I'd like to go ahead and hand off to Tom Jensen, our plans examiner supervisor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cliff. Good evening, Mayor, Council members. I'm Tom, as Cliff said, and I'm going to continue on with the work groups in the building division. As Cliff said, he did the permit technicians. The next ones are the plans examiners. They tend to be the next group that touches a permit submittal. As you can see, there's a photo of the new permit center, and that's Tanya Elder, one of my plans examiners. And there are 7 current plans examiners working in the building division right now, helping a customer. The new service center has worked out great with the different tables at different heights and counter surfaces, and really enjoying the space. So what do we do? So we're actually the main body that looks at all of the codes in effect, even touching on Mark's fire code on occasionally. The building code, the residential code, mechanical systems, plumbing, the energy code, fuel gas and plumbing, and also the last one there, the NFPA, is our electrical. Kirkland is one of the cities that does provide electrical plan review and inspection, which makes it great. So basically, we've got one-stop shopping for any customer that comes in here. They don't have to go to LNI or to King County for any of these. One of the main places we first get involved in a project is at the pre-submittal meeting along with the other departments. We look at what the customer wants to do. It could be as simple as a short plat, and we tell them what codes are in effect and what's going to affect their project. Or it could be the beginning of Kirkland Urban, and that leads into further meetings and really helping them get through all the code issues on a complex project. As I said, we look at all those codes then during plan review, and then usually we have revisions necessary. So then we tell them what is needed still on their drawings, and they send them back in, and we hopefully can get them to approval. Also during each day, we do the completeness that Cliff was talking about, electronic and sometimes paper still at the counter, but by and large, most of our submittals now are electronic. We answer counter questions, like Cliff said too, I want to build a fence, how high can it be, do I need a permit? And then also daily phone calls that come in regarding code issues. All of the plans examiners kind of work as the project manager for a permit to get it through the application process and get it to issuance. Also, a lot of my plans examiners are working on special projects, including the development of the next code cycles we'll be using in 2018 and 21, working with the other jurisdictions around here through mybuildingpermit.com to make sure we're consistent in how we approach the code. And then also just trying to get our housekeeping, conditions, checklists, things like that done that are outside of our daily. So keeps us busy. The 7 of them did touch all those 6,900 permits. Actually, combined with fire and public works, we actually breached the 10,000 mark this year in total permits. So we actually got to use the 5th digit in our permit system, finally. out of those, actually, we had over 300 new single families. I mean, 200 used to be a big year, but now we're doing 300 a year. We did that last year, too. And just like, where are we putting them all? And we have to look at every one of those. So it's been a busy year. So hopefully next year, this year will be the same. One of the other things we like to do, too, for customers to help them do self-help is always direct them to our GIS system because it's very robust and they can find out a lot of the questions that they're like, what's going on next door or through MVP and through our own GIS system. So actually, with that, I'm going to move on to me. The next section is the inspection work group. So obviously, once we've approved a set of plans, get it issued, then we turn it over to the inspection. They're out there doing the site visits. In 2016, they performed 29,469 inspections. That's over 2,400 a month, or about 113 a day. So they've been busy, and there's been on and off 9 inspectors doing that work at any given time. They also look at the same code issues. They have to be as versed as the plans examiners in all those codes because they're looking at how it's actually going into the building, the plumbing system, the electrical system, and so on. They write correction notices when things are incorrect and then follow up on the next inspection to make sure those things have been fixed. They also are responsible for complaints. So if we hear somebody saying, hey, it looks like the guy next door is doing something, he's got a bunch of drywall in his driveway, we'll go check that out and see if there's some permit-worthy work that we should have at least inspections on, if not plan review on what they're doing. They also do daily field questions while they're out there. They help contractors figure out what inspections are all going to be required. Maybe they're thinking of changing something, and they'll have discussions about, well, if you do that, it means it's going to affect this, this, and this kind of thing. So we help them make good decisions in the field and stay on track. They also get phone calls throughout the day, and even though they're in the field on their cell phones, a lot of times it might be us calling them, asking them about things, but they deal with a lot of phone calls. And as the plans examiners were the project managers to get the permit issued, they become the project managers in the field to make sure everything gets inspected and installed correctly and gets it to final and a CFO. They also help figure out when additional information is required. So sometimes permits get issued and we need more information on the balconies or the steel stairs or the roof trusses that we don't have during plan review. They're responsible to make sure that those deferred submittals come in. They also check to make sure they aren't exceeding the scope of work, and maybe they need additional permits to actually complete the work. And also, they're on special projects similar to the plans examiners, where they're working on the next cycle of the electrical code. They work with the MVP cities, again, that are also have electrical, and make sure we're doing all that the same. So all in all, we're also very busy on that side. I think that's all my numbers. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to planning, unless there's any questions, and Kayleen Novus.
Thank you, Tom.
Hello, Madam Mayor, Council, and City Manager's Office. My name is Kayleen Novus. I'm one of our three assistant planners. As you're obviously well aware, our planning department is quite large at this city, which is exciting because then I get to be employed here. But we have three assistant planners whose primary responsibility is to man the public counter. We are also the ones who answer the phones, the emails, and do a large chunk of the single family review that Tom was talking about. So if you call into the city and want to talk, have a general planning question, more likely than not, the person you're going to get is me. So what do we do? So counter planners, mostly the three assistant planners. We also have some of our general planners who will cover for our lunches and breaks and stuff like that, are subject matter experts on zoning, land use, and planning related items. We're a really nice position and staff member to have up at the counter, because while the development services permit tech is the first person, or Sarah is the first person someone will talk to when they come to the city, a lot of the times the only reason that person is coming to the city in the first place, I think, has a lot to do with planning related issues. People will come in to ask to talk to us about property line issues with their fence, neighbor issues, code enforcement, wanting to subdivide a property, wanting to do an addition, things that are might be the first trigger someone has ever needed to come into City Hall for. I want to build a deck. How do I do that? What do I need? So we're a good first point of contact for that, and also the first point of contact for things like trees. So I put a list of the kind of top 10 questions that we field on a daily basis at the public counter. Number one is trees, because not every city has tree ordinances, so from contractors, developers, homeowners, strangers, everyone wants to come in and talk to assistant planners about trees. Can I cut one down? If I can't, why not? Or how do I get there? Another thing we field a lot of questions about are subdivisions. Can I short plat my property? Is this property large enough to be able to subdivide or fit multiple units on? As well as development regulations. What can I do with my property? What can I build on this? What are my setbacks? What use am I in? So a lot of questions we field were, someone will be interested in purchasing a piece of property. So we talk a lot to real estate agents and other professionals, where they'll come in and say, there's this piece of property for sale. I want to know what use I can put there, how high I can go, how many units I can put there. Pretty in-depth conversations we have at the counter that kind of get them into that next step of a pre-submittal meeting or actually applying for a project. All of the critical and sensitive areas come through us as well, with the wetlands, streams, lakes, slopes, and native growth protection easements. We have been fielding a lot of questions recently about our update to our wetland and stream code amendments, which, as you all passed, will be in March 1st. Of this year. So we're going to get even more questions about that in the next upcoming months. Some things that people wouldn't necessarily know that planning does, but we get a lot of questions about, are about signs, how big and sign area a sign can be. Can it be neon? Can it flash? Can it be very obnoxious? Sometimes yes, sometimes no, depending. Also about mother-in-law apartments with their kind of economic climate. I think that cities are probably seeing a huge uptick in mother-in-law apartments and accessory dwelling units. As an assistant planner, we work on those a lot, so I get a lot of questions about accessory dwelling units and how big they can be, and renting them. Also, home occupations. Can I have a business in my home? Affordable housing requirements, and some of the interesting one is animals. Since our zoning code handles animals, some of the most unique questions I get are, how many chickens can I have? Or, I think my neighbor has chickens. Are they allowed to have chickens? So those are quite fun to answer. And lastly, marijuana regulations. With Washington being a state that passed the ability to have marijuana, the uptick in questions about what that entails and how someone can have a marijuana business and where it's zoned for, we get a lot of questions still about that, even though we're at the max for our licenses. People still don't understand that process, and so we field a lot of questions about that process. We do a lot of things, but there are some of them. And so that is it for me. So the next person is actually going to be Rob Jammerman with Public Works.
Thank you, Kaylee.
Thank you. Rob Jammerman, Development Engineering Manager with Public Works. And as most of you know, Public Works is responsible for management of all utilities and other construction occurring in the right-of-way and utilities on private property. We don't deal with chickens in the right-of-way, though, so we leave that to planning. So we're sort of the clearinghouse for all things related to utilities and street improvements. We have a staff of about 24 of us, but nine that are directly responsible with customer interaction at the counter. We have subject matter experts that rotate out throughout the week and work with the building and planning departments depending on the need and the type of questions out there. I don't think we're going to cover it, but a lot of what we're talking about tonight is now occurring out of this new development services counter, and where we used to require the customer to go around to the three departments, they now come to one table and we bring our subject matter experts out to them. We've received a lot of good feedback on that. The customers seem to like to stay at those tables. And then we bring up the customer. So as an example, they might start with planning, get some questions answered about subdividing the property. Maybe then the building department gets called out, and then Public Works. And we kind of work through that using our GIS data there. And so that's really a lot about what we're talking about, is how we're interacting with the customers and trying to make that as easy as possible for them. As I mentioned, Public Works' main responsibilities are right-of-way permits, so any work within the city streets. We deal with all utility types of permits. A lot of questions that we get at the counter are related to side sewer permits and surface water permits. The side sewer is the private portion of the site of the sewer from our city main over to their property. We'll deal with that either through new development or through sometimes people have problems with their line, they have to repair those. We deal a lot with utility records. So Public Works keeps all of the records for utilities that have been installed within the right-of-way or on private property. We have records clear back from the 1940s. So while people come in here and saying, hey, there's a utility line here, can you have any information? We'll pull up a lot of those records. All those records are scanned electronically now, and they're actually available to any customer actually at their home computer. They go into our GIS, they can pull up the as-builts that we have. And so we help people out a lot with that. We help, we get a lot of questions about fees, traffic impact fees, school impact fees, and park impact fees. Public Works is responsible for collection of those three permits, so we answer a lot of questions about those. Also, all of the utility connection fees, water and sewer and surface water, and then our review and inspection fees for Public Works, review and inspection of development. Just to give you an idea of magnitude, each year the development community installs anywhere from $15 to $20 million worth of public improvements with their projects that then they give to the city as they finish their projects. So street improvements, traffic signals, new sewer, new water. So that's roughly equivalent to what this capital improvement group is building. We're also seeing that being given to us in new infrastructure from the development community. We get a lot of questions about street and utility work in the neighborhood from neighbors. We, and of course this is near and dear to you, recently we get a lot of questions about surface water design requirements, and we just went through a long process with that about the changes that are occurring this year. We get questions a lot from single family homeowners about replacing their driveway or doing storm drainage improvement projects around their property. How do they fill in their ditch? Do we have a process for that if they want to fill in their ditch? We also manage all performance and maintenance securities. So we developers are required to post securities either to ensure that they're going to perform the work that they have signed up to do, or that they maintain the work for 2 years after the project's done to make sure that it doesn't have any failures. We deal with right-of-way vacations. Some of you have seen formal street vacations where there's a council-approved process and set a hearing. And then we also have the non-user street vacations, which you see on a more routine basis, usually on consent agendas. So we deal with all of those. We get a lot of questions about subdivision feasibility, utility availability, and access. So we work with the fire department, building and planning, to make sure that they're all meeting the standards there. And then last, there, transportation. We help with questions on concurrency, parking in conjunction with planning department, and then traffic studies. That's kind of on the development side. We also field a lot of questions. We just get people to come in or call, and they have questions. They know it's in Public Works, and so they usually start with us, and we get them to the right division within Public Works. So we get questions about capital improvement projects, parking permits, drainage complaints, water quality investigations. We have our surface water educational programs that we oversee. A lot of times maintenance and operation questions will come into Public Works here at City Hall. We either assist them here or we'll route them up to Public Works, up to our maintenance division. And then last, of course, we have solid waste within the Public Works. So that's sort of that's a high flyover for Public Works. There's a lot more detail there. And next up is Jay Ewan. He's going to talk a little bit about utility billing.
Thank you, Rob.
All right, thank you very much. My name is, good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Jay Ewan. I'm the Customer Account Supervisor for the city. Our team is a wonderful, wonderfully eclectic group that includes our business licensing, utility billing, cemetery, passports, and we'll start with the cashiering function. The City of Kirkland has a central cashier that handles all of our daily transactions at City Hall. That includes utility billing, licensing, development services, parking meters, parks revenues, just to name some of them. And all of our daily transactions are balanced nightly. We just wrapped up about a half hour ago for this evening, very busy day. With our cashier statement, some of the most popular questions we get are, can I call in my payment? Generally, the answer is no, which is why we offer dynamic portals that the customers can use in order to pay, so that we, for their own safety, we don't want to take their credit card numbers over the phone. So we have a utility billing payment site. We have mybuildingpermit.com that we can refer customers to. One of the unusual ones is, I would like to license my pet. As a service for King County, we do offer pet licensing, even though we don't regulate the program ourselves. It's run through the county, but similar to passports, we do offer the service for our residents, and I do get the privilege of seeing some of the creative pet names that our residents have. Hendrix, Green Beans, Baby Kisses, and my favorite, Dog and Cat. One of the programs that we're trying to promote is when we get questions about discounted utilities. We do have a senior and disabled discount program that, if certain income levels are met, we're able to offer a discount in the base rate for water, sewer, and garbage. So if you get an opportunity to speak to these groups, please refer them to us. We'd be happy to pass on that information to them. We also get a lot of questions about just routine transactions that may have taken place at City Hall, the unfortunate times when we receive NSFs, and other questions about receipts if a customer wants a copy, for instance. Our utility billing team, we do get a lot of people, even in today's age of people being able to pay online or through their own bank. A lot of people every other month still want to come to City Hall and pay. So we are able to handle that either via cash, check, or credit card. Our utility billing counter is able to assist customers with specific information about their accounts or to be able to provide specific service requests, such as if they want to set up billing for their tenants or property managers, if they want to sign up for an ACH program, if they want to learn some of the specific charges that were on their account, we're able to help in this capacity. And if it's just a payment only, and the customer already knows how much they owe and their account number, in that case, they'll generally just go straight through the cashier. Some of the more popular questions we get through utility billing is, I need to change my garbage service level. Those calls are generally directed to waste management. However, when we do speak to customers, we do explain to them the cost savings that they do, that they can obtain when they utilize smaller carts for their residential single-family homes, which, of course, helps encourage recycling and increase our diversion rate. Another question frequently is, if they're going to demo their home, how do I stop services? That's a situation where we coordinate with Public Works, and while they're disconnected and under demolition status, the base charges will stop until they're reconnected. Why is my water bill so high? That one, a lot of times, is tough to answer because it can be so many different factors. The bigger the family size, the or if teenagers like to take long showers, there's a lot of different things that we can try to explain to the customers that might explain why their water consumption is high. Irrigation, power washing, that's just some of the other things that we might suggest. And finally, how do I submit a leak adjustment? The Kirkland Municipal Code does have a formula that allows customers in the unfortunate circumstances when they have a leak that they can get part of that bill credited off of their account. Basically, we look at the base rate for water, we add 10%, and then we look at the difference between the high consumption because of the leak and what the prior consumption was during that same month during prior years, so that we can look at the difference between average and the unusual consumption. So that is our customer accounts team. It's my pleasure next to introduce Shauna Davis, our welcome new tenants to City Hall with our Parks and Community Services team.
Thank you, Jay.
Good evening. I'm very excited to be here. I am the new customer service supervisor for Parks and Community Services. I've only been here 2 months. But so many cool things happening in the city of Kirkland, so it is an honor. We just moved back to City Hall last week. Oh, yeah, better put that slide up. which way do I do it? There we go. So here is our second day back in park in the downstairs customer service hub that we're developing. So it's still a work in progress. We do plan to have a counter there that will be accessible for ADA as well as at a higher level. So it is a work in progress. It has been 15 years since we've been at City Hall. We were over at the Market Street building before this. So our new customer service hub is, it consists of myself and two staff members. We're trying to make a one-stop shop opportunity for our customers. The one really, really cool thing that we have going on is our new Rec One software that I am in charge of trying to implement with my staff. It's going to make it a one-stop opportunity for people to register for recreation programs in person as well as online. They can do facility rentals, pavilion, picnic shelters, heritage hall, and community centers. Also, we're automating our athletic sports fields process, and we'll be able to assist with boat launch operations. We are also a gateway for Green Kirkland, Human Services, and all the parks planning questions. So we're very, very excited about this new opportunity to have the customer service hub and an in-person opportunity to help our citizens. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Shauna.
Good evening, I'm back. So I'm going to wrap up the presentation this evening. Back before the remodel went ahead, Chris Dodd, the facilities manager, took a group of developers as well as with some staff through what the design was going to look like. And 4 months after we opened the customer service lobby, the same developers were welcomed back to gather feedback. Part of that feedback was that they find it easy to drop things off without waiting, so they can either drop it with myself and I will date stamp it, or they can just walk over to development services and drop it with a permit technician. I mentioned the customer assistance tracking system earlier and I didn't touch on that, so I apologize, so I'll touch on it now. It's our queuing system. So when a customer comes in, whether it's to the customer service desk and they're signing in for passports or over to development services, they get put into a queue. And how that queue works is the permit technician fields the questions of why they came to City Hall. And based off of the information that they gather, they decide who's the first point of contact or subject matter expert that the customer should meet with. So they put them into the system, and the system automatically sends a page through a cell phone, it's a text message, to the subject matter expert. That subject matter expert then comes and meets them in the lobby at a table. It's seamless for the customer. The customer is sent to, say, table 4. They work with a planner to begin with, and the planner decides, you know what, you really need to talk to the building department. So the planner makes a change in the computer, it sends a message to the plans examiner, they come out, and it's a warm handoff. So the customer never leaves the table, and it's all done through the queuing system. The developers felt that it worked well. They love the feel of the remodel. It's very casual, but it's not cold. It's inviting. The method of the staff coming out and doing the walkabout is working great. They had nothing but positive feedback for us. One of the developers actually said that it is their favorite development center to come to. So I felt that we achieved what we are looking to achieve, as well as moving forward with some great improvements in 2017. At this time, it concludes the presentation. Do you guys have any questions for the staff?
Mr. Nixon?
Well, thank you very much. That's all very informative. As I was going through, I was kind of ticking off from my list of city departments as to who had been represented and who hadn't. And I'm curious the extent to which you interface with police, courts, the jail, you know, the departments that are at the Justice Center to implement the same kind of customer service principles. Is that happening, or is that something that ought to happen?
That's a great question. It's something that I myself, and I know that the city manager's office, foresees in the future. It wasn't a focus in 2016 due to the renovation and all the changes that were happening at City Hall, but I would love to have the opportunity to be able to go out and work at the Justice Center as well as over at the Maintenance Center, the community centers, anywhere where we are actually interacting with customers. It would be an honor to spend time and develop the customer service model in those areas as well.
Yeah, just to follow up, as Sarah said, when we crafted the position and we talked about the customer service initiative, we wanted to be able to roll out to all facilities, but given the intensity of the remodel and the big focus of the customer service lobby, we really spent all of 2016 here. And so as we get this all shaken out and we know how to do it, then we'll be moving particularly to the Justice Center to start and then looking at some of the other locations as well.
A couple of other things that I didn't see in the list. One is HR, particularly employment. How do you deal with people who show up at the front desk and are looking to apply for city jobs? Do you just send them downstairs to HR? Does HR send somebody up? How does that work?
No, so how it works currently is I will call down to HR to see if there is a human resources staff member available to talk with the customer. In most instances right now, they are referred to the website for job applications.
Okay. And my last one was public records, and I assume that's kind of the same. If somebody shows up in person and wants to make a public records request, do we just refer them to the website, or do we have some in-person way we handle that?
No, there's a couple different ways that it can be handled. So they can file the public records request with the customer service desk.
Okay.
And they also have access through the kiosk out here by development services that
myself or a volunteer can walk them over and show them how to use the public records request portal.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold.
Thank you. It's great to see all the work that all the different departments are doing. I heard a lot about record activity, and we're tracking all this information in the customer assistance portal. Do you track wait times? And if so, how have the wait times been for
So I folks? Haven't been checking wait times.
Okay.
We've been looking more at the numbers, which department is the busiest, so where do we maybe need more resources. Currently at this time, the planning department is super busy on a regular basis, as well as, to believe it or not, passports. So I believe in the month of November, and Jay can speak to this, was it 200%? You want to come on up? I don't want to give the wrong stats.
Actually, I was just looking at the numbers today. This has been our busiest passport year since 2007. This past December, this past month, was the busiest December we've ever had. November, we had over 200 passports that month, and there had been no other month that was over 100 in any prior year. So the amount of passports applications have really been off the charts, and has been a frequent group of families that have been populating our lobby on a regular basis.
And then secondly, the other common theme I heard is lots of folks have got their top 10 list of requests or questions. Is there a feedback loop where you're also working to get some of these common things up on our website to keep people from having to come into City Hall to get their questions answered?
I believe most departments, if you go out to their website, have the frequently asked questions posted to their website, but that's great feedback that we can add if it's not currently out there.
Okay. I think that might change over time because you're the one that's dealing with people's feedback, and there's something, passport's a great example. If there's a big rush on passports, having maybe a need for a special update on the website to say, here's the process, here are the hours, et cetera.
Correct. And we did just update as of today, actually, our passport hours. And so there was, I did put a red banner out. This year is supposed to be one of the highest volume years for passports in general, not just at the city of Kirkland. And so we have put a red banner on the passport page, letting the customers know.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sweet.
Pardon me. Sarah, I just want to say this is great information. It's really good to get a sense of what is going on back there. It is a beehive. And I am so proud of the fact that we have accomplished so much in such a short period of time. I'm up here often enough and meeting with people in the lobby. It's just really working. And I think you guys should all be really, really proud of yourselves and of the feedback that we're getting from everybody who experiences it. Thank you.
Okay, well, I also want to say thank you, first of all, for spending your evening with us. Thanks for being here. Please feel free to stay all evening. It's going to be a fun night. But, I know that you were all involved in the design of the space, and it shows that you really care about how people interact with us. I think that sometimes we forget that, usually if you're coming to City Hall, you're kind of maybe a little bit intimidated. It's not necessarily good news, or you're worried. It can be kind of an intimidating place to come. And I noticed throughout your presentation there were pictures of you all smiling at your counters, and I certainly experienced that. So I just want to thank you for everything that you do every day. I mean, it's just, I think, there's a, you described a lot of services that you provide, and I'm very, very appreciative of this completely different feel from the old City Hall, where, you came in. Now we have, someone sitting there greeting you, and it's very clearly marked where you need to go, and I just appreciate it, all the work that you did, and I especially love this display out here that shows you where you are in the queue and the coming out to people find, it's a feeling that you are being helped and that someone cares about you when they come out from behind a counter. It's a totally different relationship. So I want to thank you very much for everything that you do. Mr. Nixon.
Yeah, one more question. We've had discussions in the council in the past about making sure that our services are accessible to people who aren't native English speakers. Maybe they're deaf or hard of hearing, those sorts of things. And I'm curious, over this time that you've been putting this program together, how often have you had to work with people, customers, who either don't speak English well or need sign language interpretation or those kind of that kind of special assistance? And is that something that maybe we need to be concerned about, making sure that we have the right tools and resources for that?
So I can only speak for myself at the customer service desk, and I have yet to have to use an external service to assist a customer. We do have the language line, and all the front counter staff is aware, and non-front counter staff, on how to use the language line.
Great.
And that's all tracked through human resources on when that line is used.
Super. Thank you.
Other comments? Questions? Thank you all.
Thank you.
For being here.
Thank you.
All right. We will return for the rest of our meeting at 7:30. Thank you.
We're live, Mayor.
Good evening. Welcome. Welcome, everyone. Happy New Year. This is the first meeting of the Kirkland City Council. It is January 3rd, 2017. I'm going to ask Ms. Anderson to call the roll, please.
Councilmember Nixon.
Here.
Councilmember Pascal.
Here.
Councilmember Marchioni.
Here.
Councilmember Sweet.
Here.
Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Wallen.
Here. Thank you very much. So we're back in a session following a study session related to our front counter customer service initiatives. Councilmember Asher is not here at the moment, but he is on his way and will be attending tonight's meeting. He has a prior engagement. So the very first item on our agenda this evening is the oath of office for Councilmember John Pascal, City Manager.
All right. Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council, and the public. As we know, Shelley Klobel was elected to the State House of Representatives and resigned her seat effective December 31st, and the City Council in December appointed John Pascal to be the new council member to fill her vacancy. Today we have the honor of seeing that oath of office for Councilmember Pascal, and it's going to be administered by the Honorable Michael Lambeau, who is our municipal court judge for the City of Kirkland. So this is going to happen right down here.
Have you raise your right hand for me, sir. Do you, John Pascal, having been duly appointed to the office of Kirkland City Council, position number 2, solemnly swear that you will faithfully and impartially discharge the duties of this office as prescribed by law and to the best of your ability, and that you will support and maintain the Constitution of the State of Washington and of the United States of America?
I do.
Congratulations.
So Councilmember Pascal is going to make a few remarks, and then we're going to take a short break so that we can have some photos with his family.
Well, first of all, Mayor, Deputy Mayor, Council members, thank you for entrusting me with this opportunity to serve Kirkland. Sitting in this chair is a great honor, and I'm really looking forward to working with all of you and working for the citizens of Kirkland. I want to acknowledge the other great candidates that applied for this position. We had just a great number of folks interested in this, all very qualified, and that was a very humbling to see that, that great interest in this. It really shows that Kirkland is a very special place, that people really care about our community and want to participate. As I look in the audience tonight, I see it's good to see a lot of familiar faces. Folks that have supported me, folks that have mentored me, folks that have inspired me in getting and staying involved in the Kirkland community over these years. Many of you probably are not aware, but I first started my service to Kirkland in 2001 after moving here, and I was trying to find a way to give back to the community. I saw an ad for a transportation commissioner and thought, wow, that would be a good way, and I applied and luckily was appointed, served a number of years there on the commission, and that really cultivated my desire to really lend in my expertise and a knowledge to help shape the future of the city. And then after serving those two terms, I was on the Planning Commission to really, the motivation there was really to make sure to integrate the recently annexed neighborhoods of Northern Kirkland into the city. And so as a council member now, I really look forward to working with the boards and the commissions. There's a number of great volunteers that serve on those entities, and I'm going to have that unique perspective of having been there and being able to value and their contributions and their advice. I also look forward to working with our neighborhood leaders, many of which I see out in the audience today, some of which I see out in the audience today. After annexation, I became involved in the neighborhood, working with some dedicated volunteers of the Finn Hill Neighborhood Alliance. And through that experience, I got to meet other neighborhood leaders through the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods, some of who are here today. Those folks really exposed me to the dedication that folks have in this community. And neighborhoods really define the city. And I'm really looking forward to, as a council person, working with the neighborhoods in the future. So collectively, all these experiences have gotten me to where I am today, and to take on this new challenge as a council member. And I'm going to take this position, obviously, very seriously. It's quite an honor. But there's no way that I could be successful in this position without the support of my family. And they are here with me today. Kristen, my wife, Grady, and Emma, son and daughter, and then my parents, Bob and Jenny. So thank you for your love and encouragement and support.
So, congratulations, council member. You are truly a person who has embraced the idea of being a public servant, and your long service is much appreciated by your city, and we are very much looking forward to working with you. So let's have a round of applause and then a quick break for some photos. So we'll be back in 5 minutes.
We're live, Mayor.
I don't see your name.
Mayor, we're live.
I'm sure they got it.
Thank you very much, everyone. We are back in session after a quick break to celebrate Councilmember Pascal's joining or taking the oath of office. So the next item on our agenda is under honors and proclamations. It is the Inclusive Communities Proclamation. City Manager.
All right. Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. So with the somewhat troubled times that have gone on, the City Council in December felt that it was really important to remind everybody that the City of Kirkland always has been and will continue to be a safe, welcoming, and inclusive community. And the City Council wanted to do that through issuing a formal proclamation to start off the new year. And also asked that this be a topic on our February council retreat, where we can actually come up with some specific action items that will also do far more than just make proclamations. But if there's additional work that needs to be done in the city, you wanted to take that work up. Am I off? I'm sorry. Should I say that all again, or did we get most of it?
We got most of it.
Okay. So tonight we are going to issue the proclamation, and we have a wonderful group of folks here dressed in white who came to witness the proclamation and would like to receive it and also say a few words at the end of the proclamation. So.
Thank you very much. And this group in white also was sort of one of the drivers of making this happen, and we very much appreciate your leadership. Councilmember Nixon is going to be joining me to read this proclamation.
Would you like to join us?
proclamation of the city of Kirkland, proclaiming Kirkland as a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city for all people. Whereas Kirkland's vision statement describes the city as being a welcoming place to live, work, and play that highly values diversity and is respectful, fair, and inclusive, committed to providing neighborhoods and businesses that meet the needs of a variety of incomes, ages, and lifestyles, with community engagement that creates a sense of belonging through shared values. And whereas the city of Kirkland is committed to protecting and serving everyone who resides in, works in, or visits Kirkland without discrimination based on race, religion, color, national origin, sex, age, income or economic status, political affiliation, military status, sexual orientation, or physical, mental, or sensory ability. And whereas Kirkland believes in the dignity, equality, and constitutional and civil rights of all people and will not tolerate hate, intolerance, discrimination, harassment, or any behavior that creates fear, isolation, or intimidation. And whereas Kirkland's vibrancy and sense of community is stronger for our diversity and shared values of acceptance and respect. And whereas the Kirkland City Council supports these principles and strives to reflect them in their actions as Kirkland's elected leaders. And whereas Kirkland City employees also support these principles and strive to embody these ideals every day, as they provide critical services such as police, fire, parks, public works, and much more, in an inclusive and equitable manner to all residents, visitors, and businesses in Kirkland. Now, therefore, Amy Wallen, Mayor of Kirkland, does hereby proclaim that the city of Kirkland is deeply committed to promoting a just society that respects and welcomes all people, and directs city staff to assist the city council in developing and implementing a program to communicate the city's values, and invites the community to come together to discuss and support the shared values of diversity and inclusion.
Thank you. I believe we're all going to speak. And do you want us to speak now? Please. I'm going to let
Leah go first.
Hi. Thank you for having us, and thank you so much for the proclamation tonight. My name is Leah Kleiger. I live at 125 11th Avenue in Kirkland, which is in the Norkirk neighborhood. I'm here to thank you, our city leaders, tonight for issuing the Inclusive Community Proclamation. This heroic proclamation reinforces our community's acceptance of equal treatment and safety for everyone in Kirkland. Why is this so important to myself, to other members of our community who are sitting with us tonight in white, and to thousands of others in 2017? Let me tell you a little story. In the early 1900s, only one of my 16 Jewish great-grandparents left home in what is now Latvia, boarded a ship, and immigrated to New York City. Subsequently, in serial immigration fashion, my grandfather brought his wife Fanny, my grandfather Ben, and Ben's four sisters to New York City. Max Kleiger, my risk-taking 40-year-old great-grandfather, could foresee that the ever-present persecution of Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, and many other groups in Eastern Europe was not going to abate. Additional persecution and pogroms loomed. With little money, but with the knowledge that a better life for his family awaited, Max fled. His fortuitous decision saved the lives of my nuclear family from the Holocaust, his nuclear family from the Holocaust. Unfortunately, at least 75 of my parents' other relatives, some as young as 2 months, were murdered. Some of their bodies were shoved into shallow, unmarked graves. Others were shoved off the dunes into the Baltic Sea. Still others died in concentration camps. Resistors, including my father's cousins, were shot on the spot at a fish factory where they had decided to take a stand against tyranny. Several years ago, my husband and I visited the Eastern European towns and cities where so many of my relatives died. It was a heart-wrenching trip. History tells us that city leaders and citizens of these towns did not speak up against demagoguery and hate when they had a chance to do so. Many encouraged and voted to outlaw basic human rights. Propaganda was used to spread anti-Semitic, racist goals and ideals. A powerful quote about the consequences of not speaking up, attributed to Martin Niemöller, a prominent Protestant pastor who emerged as an outspoken public foe of Adolf Hitler and spent the last 7 years of Nazi rule in concentration camps, states, "First, they came for the socialist, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionist, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew." Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. As a Jew and a resident of the city of Kirkland for almost 30 years, I am so proud and so very grateful to live in a community where city leaders are willing to listen to citizens like me and the others who ask them to speak up and confront hate and despotism. The community conversations you are considering having and will be discussing at your February 2017 retreat are admirable and precedent-setting next steps, ones that will serve to unify and educate our citizens. Thank you for being so courageous as leaders. Thank you for your time and for your service to our community. I go to sleep every night knowing that I will be safe and protected. I will not have to flee.
Hi, I'm Susan David, and I'm a resident of Kirkland. I live in the North Rose Hill area of Kirkland at 12730 Northeast 101st Place. I want to talk to you briefly about the proclamation that declares the city's values around inclusion and acceptance. I love living in a city where the city is committed to promoting a just society that respects and welcomes all people, where the city leaders are willing to invite community members to come together to discuss the support of our values, like us. I have MS and am disabled. I am the proud mother of two wonderful sons, one of whom is gay. I'm also the daughter of a New York City firefighter. My dad lost friends and fellow firefighters in the line of duty, and I remember as a little kid what it was like to wonder if my father would be coming home from a shift. I know and understand some of what our first responders and their families have to deal with. I love living in a city where the police and firefighters are well trained to support and protect a diverse population, where the Kirkland police chief issued a statement in November, and I quote, "We want people to know that our job is to protect and serve the entire community, and no resident should fear reporting any crime or intimidation, regardless of their immigration status. Our mission has not changed and will not change. We want everyone to feel safe, and if they don't, we want to know about it." End of quote. A couple of years ago, my teenage granddaughter was driving to help me after school. She was in an accident on 108th Street in which she was at fault. Of course, she was very upset. The officer who responded was extremely kind and was able to calm her down until her dad arrived. Clearly, he was well-trained at his job. I encourage Kirkland to continue the programs they have and even expand upon them to train first responders and other city workers to deal with difficult situations in our diverse community. Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming.
I'm Reverend Marion Stewart. I serve as minister to Northlake Unitarian Universalist Church on State Street here in Kirkland. I've been here for 9 years. Thank you, Madam Mayor and City Council. Quoting Theodore Parker, a Unitarian minister from the 1800s, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. preached a powerful message that still resonates today. The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. I'm here to remind us all that the arc does not bend toward justice without struggle. King knew it, Parker knew it, and we know it. A vision of a just world, a just nation, and a just community is not a passive ideal. With a threat of registration lists, deportations, and walls on the borders, in conjunction with a license to be hateful, my friends, we have much to fear. In response, we can cower, we can become cynical, or we can put our heads in the sand, or we can stand up for justice. We may not be able to bend the arc at this point in time, but the least we can do is keep it from bending backwards. By declaring Kirkland to be a hate-free city and reaffirming that all residents, employees, employers, and visitors alike are worthy of not just basic human dignity, but more than that, that all people are worthy of respect, love, and justice. In doing so, Kirkland stands up for its long-held values of hospitality and welcome. If we want to see a better world where we all live in peace as friends, neighbors, and fellow citizens, then we must work hard to fight for what is right and just. The time is now. By passing this proclamation, Kirkland is drawing a line in the sand and declares that hate does not win here. Love wins. And all people are welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here tonight. The next item on our agenda is under communications. It's an announcement. Tonight, I'm sad to announce that Kirkland has lost one of its community leaders, D.V. Hurst, who served as president of Northwest Christian College from 1966 to 90, and on the Kirkland City Council from 1976 to 1986, passed away in December. Dr. Hurst successfully ran for City Council in 1975 and served for 3 terms, including 2 as mayor. During his tenure on the council, the city adopted its first comprehensive land use plan, long before it was required by the state. The plan was adopted on May 17, 1977, and was immediately followed by numerous lawsuits challenging the city's authority to downzone. In 1979, the City Council opened the combined library and senior center in Peter Kirk Park. The 7,200-square-foot addition to the expanded library building was built and furnished for $813,000. D.V. Hurst was selected as mayor in 1980. In 1982, during his second term as mayor, he presided over the dedication of a brand-new city hall. Councilmember Hurst was reelected in 1983 and was instrumental in keeping the Seahawks headquartered in Kirkland. In 1986, the Seahawks signed a 20-year lease for a 12-acre site adjacent to the Northwest College. As former Councilmember Bob Neer wrote in his book about Kirkland, how was that little Christian college in Kirkland able to attract a National Football League franchise? We had faith, was President D.V. Hurst's Cheshire Cat response. After 12 years on the Kirkland City Council, Dr. Hurst chose not to seek re-election but remained active in the community, and we will always be grateful for his many years of service and his foresight in helping to create an outstanding community. So thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is also under communications. It's items from the audience. This is the time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for public hearing. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than 3 people speak on any one subject. However, if both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to 3 proponents and 3 opponents may address the council. I do have a sign-in sheet. The first person to have signed in is Rich Thomas. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Okay, Madam Mayor, City Council members, and City Administrators, we're representing our Kirkland Senior Council tonight, a group chartered by the City Council to act as an advisory capacity and advocate for the well-being of the senior population of our city. One primary focus of our advocacy is the widening gap between the income of many retirees and the rising cost of housing, medical care, and prescription drugs. Many seniors struggle to maintain their homes while property taxes or rent increase to a greater degree than Social Security payments. These problems expand to a continuously greater population as more of us reach retirement age daily. Social Security needs to be strengthened to keep up with the need, and Medicare needs to be expanded to include additional resources for more retirees. The Senior Council would like to extend an invitation, to keep up to the City Council to attend our February 14th meeting to hear a presentation that addresses these issues by a representative of Puget Sound Advocates for Retirement Action, PSARA. This will be a 30-minute presentation with additional time for Q&A and will present data on the gravity of these issues right here in our region, and it will present real common-sense solutions, including how to pay for those solutions. PSARA is attempting to produce a grassroots action starting with local city governments and state elected officials up to federal elected officials to highlight the need for these improvements. The Seattle City Council and King County Council have already created resolutions to support efforts to secure longevity of Social Security and Medicare. We encourage City Council members to join us for this presentation and to support efforts to bring emphasis to this growing problem here in our city and beyond. The presentation will be held at our regular meeting February 14th at 5:45 p.m. at the Peter Kirk Community Center, and we would welcome your attendance at this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your service. Can't think of a group I'd rather spend my Valentine's evening with than the Senior Council, and I mean that sincerely. The next person to have signed in is Susan David. Oh, thank you, Susan. And Leah? Yes. And Dr. Stewart, thank you. The next person to have signed in is Karen Story.
Good evening. As a member of the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods, I am pleased to announce that we will be hosting, along with the City of Kirkland, a citywide neighborhood forum on Monday, January 23rd. The free 3-hour event is called For the Love of Kirkland and will be led by acclaimed community engagement expert Peter Kagayama, author of For the Love of Cities and Love Where You Live. The goals of this event are to celebrate Kirkland's neighborhoods and inspire people to become more involved in their neighborhood associations. Anyone who is interested in exploring ways to make Kirkland an even better place to live and work is encouraged to attend. This interactive event will explore topics such as what makes cities lovable, what do we love about Kirkland, how can we make Kirkland even more lovable, how can individuals make a difference. Space will be limited, so watch for more information in the next week or so via city listservs, local media, Nextdoor, and neighborhood email lists. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. The next person to have signed in is Ken McKenzie.
Technology works. So I'm here to talk about 2015 Proposition 1, because it's coming back. There's been some really interesting discussions, and I was recently invited to join a meeting with the city manager, and I appreciate that opportunity, and this is just an effort to kind of keep the conversation going, if I can get this working. Okay, I have one slide. I'm a data-driven kind of guy. I like to start the conversation with a common understanding of what's going on. So I put this together based on data that I got from the PDC database and also from King County. When I looked at that campaign, what I discovered was that about 96% of the people who contributed to the No campaign came from Kirkland, and about 61% of the people who came from the Yes campaign contributed to, 61% of the people who contributed to the Yes campaign came from Kirkland. And that suddenly told me that the Yes campaign was a more regional kind of thing. And I thought that was pretty interesting. The No campaign raised about $8,000, and the Yes campaign raised a little over $63,000. And I also found that was pretty interesting, too. And then the last fact that I kind of wanted to review, because it's been a couple of years, or will have been a couple of years, and there's been some new people involved, that 12,000 people in Kirkland voted against the proposition, and 7,000 voted in favor of it. But then the thing that really struck me was there were 19,300 total votes concerning Proposition 1. And when I looked at the city council races that were contested, it was about 17,000 in one and 16,000 in the other. So it was like there was a lot more interest in this Proposition 1, which struck me as interesting. And I'm not sure quite what to make of that. So I just wanted to get this data out. And as we kind of move toward thinking about what to do with metropolitan park districts in Kirkland. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person to have signed in is Inga Thiessen. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Inga Thiessen, and I live in the Juanita portion of Kirkland, and I once was a proud member of the City of Kirkland Citizens Advisory Committee for Juanita in 1986 and 87. And I was one of the people who recommended that we try to be annexed to the city because I liked the land use plans of the City of Kirkland. I'm here because when I first moved to Seattle, from Chicago, I came from a big city. My parents were immigrants, and I was very conscious of the fact that it was mostly white Europeans who took this country away from the people who originally lived here. So all of us who are the descendants of Europeans are really the immigrants, and I'm very conscious of that. So I studied American government at night school in Chicago before I ever moved to Kirkland. But in Kirkland, the city seemed so accessible to citizens, and the church that I attended, which was the North Lake Unitarian Church, had members of its small congregation on every city commission, and I was really proud to be a part of that kind of a social conscience church. And I nag my current church friends whenever anyone says anything about what the city does. I say, have you served on a city commission or a council? And I want to commend you all because I personally feel that our city is a welcoming, just city. And I do think that all of us individual citizens play a part in that. For example, when one of my sons in kindergarten was bused to a school in Kirkland farther away, he once asked if he could get permission to invite a little boy to come home on the school bus with him. And that meant I had to write a letter to the school to get permission since the school was farther away. And a woman who called me was a black voice and said, why are you inviting my child to come and visit? And I said, because he's my son's playmate in school. That was the first time that I knew that there was a black family in Kirkland because we were a very white city. That same little boy in fourth grade was the only child at Juanita Elementary School who gave his turn on the slide in the playground in fourth grade to the Samoan family of children who moved to Juanita. This would have been back in the 60s. So I'm saying that as a parent and as a citizen, number one, I'm conscious of equality and fair play because my own parents were immigrants. But I do think that our city is supportive of the kinds of situations. The day that son of mine took that action in school, he didn't come home and tell me about it. The school that day had a teacher's meeting, and the entire school teachers were conscious then of what needed to be done, which was education. And I think our city and our city councils have been responsive to citizens who take part in being active citizens. So I want to compliment you, even though I'm in favor of the proclamation, I want to let you know that I do think that our city is responsive to issues that citizens bring to your attention.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So we've reached the end of our sign-in sheet. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council at this time? Seeing none, I'll declare this items from the audience period closed. And we'll move on to item 8, its special presentation. We have a very special guest. It's John Wilson, the King County Assessor, City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Assessor here at the City of Kirkland to talk to us today. John was elected in 2015 as the assessor after 4 years as the chief deputy assessor and many varied career in the public and private sector, working for folks such as Dan Evans and Ron Sims and Al Swift, as well as in various media roles, very award-winning media roles. So he has made it a point to get out and talk to all communities and tell more about what's going on in assessments. And Kirkland is actually his first visit. So we got him first. We're very grateful to have him here. So welcome, Mr. Assessor.
Thank you, Mr. Triplett. Thank you, council members, Ms. Whalen, and others. I also see many friends in the crowd that I've worked with before, and friends that I'm working with nowadays. Ms. McBride was here a moment ago. We're working on some things. I'm going to not talk a long time because on a cold night like this, rather than getting a lot of hot air from the assessor, you'd probably rather get a hot drink at home. So let's try to cut to the chase here. As you can imagine, this time of year with property tax bills going out in mid-February, we're working fast and furious to do the final calculations on the tax rolls for all the communities. It's a daunting task. We have 161 taxing districts and now close to 600 separate levy codes we have to calculate. One important note this year, for the first time, you will see on your tax statement, especially here in Kirkland and other communities within the Regional Transportation District, a property tax hit for Sound Transit 3, which, as you all know, passed in November. It will go on the property tax statement that comes out in February with payments first due in April. It will actually, of the various taxes that were included in ST3, be the first one that the public will see. We're happy to answer questions about that once we get further down the road. We'll be back here and welcome an opportunity to meet with constituents or with council members to further explain that. It also, though, raises a challenge for us. One of the things we will be watching very closely this year is what the legislature does as far as McCleary. Because with Sound Transit going for a property tax option, the first time it's done so, if the levy swap idea gains traction in Olympia, we could stand in a position of being left with only 14 cents of levy capacity on the $10 of levy capacity that we normally would have. That puts us in a perilous state. It will not directly or immediately have an impact on a senior taxing district such as the City of Kirkland, but you have the risk that you could see hospital districts such as Evergreen, parks districts, fire districts, and that could well find themselves in a compression or prorationing state. We're going to watch that very carefully. We'll be in contact with you periodically to kind of let you know where we see things going. I want to give you a little idea of what's been happening in property values in Kirkland. I'm sure you're not surprised if you've all lived here a long time, but they're going up. Roughly by about 10% from the previous year's level. As you know, property taxes are not directly linked to market value or assessed value rates. So that does not mean property taxes will be going up 10%. So everybody take a deep breath, back away from the checkbook. But be prepared that you are going to see an increase in values in that. The other thing I wanted to talk a little bit is about affordable housing, and then I'd like to open it for some questions. Affordable housing has been something that has been a deep personal concern as well as a policy concern for me, because as I've traveled around the county this past year, it's touched every corner of this county, and I'm sure you of all and all of you in this audience have seen the impacts of it, especially on seniors. You know, one of the accomplishments I'm very proud of our office this past year is when we came into office in the beginning of 2016, we had roughly 15,000 people countywide enrolled in the senior exemption program. By the end of 2016, we had garnered applications from nearly 5,000 people countywide, a 33% increase in the number of people applying to get into the program in just 1 year. It spoke to me of how desperate people are to try to find, especially seniors, some way to stay in their home, and why we think it's very important that the county do whatever we can to help people stay in that home. So we've been working on that. We've been working on other ideas. We've been working with members of the state legislature the speaker, Ms. McBride, and others, to identify how we might preserve existing affordable housing, both multifamily units and perhaps even allow it to cover auxiliary dwelling units. We've been working with the City of Seattle to try to come up with a compromise bill that we hope will move forward in the legislature. The other thing we've been working on is trying a rather innovative approach, and we're frankly still at a very nascent stage of this, but trying to do modular housing for emergency homeless housing or transitional homeless housing. One of the things I did when I came into office is I said, you know, we're the custodian of the county's property database. We know something about every piece of property, some nearly 700,000 in this county. So we went about and we identified both in the City of Seattle and later in the county as a whole, and we'd be happy to do this for the City of Kirkland, by the way, properties that were publicly owned that were of a sufficient size and near public transportation that they might be eligible for us to use to develop emergency or low-income housing and that. In the City of Seattle, for example, we found some 300 sites that were 20,000 square feet or larger and were within about a quarter mile of mass transit. In the county, we found another 200 sites that were similarly of size or scale. And right now we're working on trying to secure philanthropy funding for a temporary pilot project down on the Seattle waterfront that would house about 120 people in a managed care environment so that we could get people out of tent cities into safe, secure housing and on the way to being self-sustaining home occupants on their own. So those are some of the things that we've been working on. We'll be happy to answer any questions both now and in subsequent months. If you have any, please contact my office or the ever-busy Mr. Stover over there, who, as you know, is very busy these days with a new hat that he put on. I don't know why he did that, but there's some things that are just not explainable. So with that, I want to thank you for the opportunity to come over here and speak to all of you and wish you a very, very happy new year.
Thank you very much, sir. Do we have questions for the assessor?
Off to that hot beverage.
I have heard you speak a lot about seniors, and it's just timely that our senior council's here. So thank you very much for being here.
Well, and we appreciate you.
All of your advocacy.
We came over several months ago, and you guys were one of the first also during that where you stepped up and helped us get the word out. And I got to tell you, I had somebody come up to me Labor Day, said, you know, I finally got my exemption, and it literally made the difference of whether I was going to have to sell my house or I could stay. And that's the kind of good news that you like to hear.
And we thank you for it.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is also a special presentation, a very special presentation. It is the Community Emergency Response Team graduation. City Manager.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. So, time of New Year's resolutions, and most of us make a resolution every year that we're going to get our emergency kit ready and be trained for emergencies. Tonight, we're going to celebrate a group that actually followed through on that and actually implemented their resolution last year. So here to do our CERT graduation for CERT Team 22 is Patty Jean Hooper, our emergency manager. The way this is going to work is as she introduces the folks, after she says a little bit about the program, the CERT graduates are going to come through and shake hands with all the council members, and then the mayor will be presenting the certificate when you get to the mayor. So, and then at the end of this, there will be a period afterward where the CERT graduates will go and have a celebration. So,
excellent.
So, take it away,
Let's
Patty
get
Jean.
Started.
So what the city manager just said is you people rock. Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council members. It is my pleasure to present CERT 22. CERT 22 is a number that for 22 classes, members of the community, many of you who are city council members, and you're on our list, are members of CERT and CERT trained, because we all know that a first responder is the person next to you. And the first responders in this room have taken the time from volunteerism in the community, from being active parents, grandparents, and highly engaged citizens to become involved in community emergency response team training. So they are here today for graduation. Before we begin, we need to thank the instructional team. Before we begin, we have Christina, who is our lead instructor for all 22 years, Kristen, Todd, 22 classes, excuse me. Aaron, Alex, Kristen, Todd, and Janice are also on the instructional team, all as volunteer instructors.
Thank you all.
CERT has conducted this training at the Kirkland Justice Center, so we need to thank Chief Harris and Patty Ball for the lovely facility that we were able to utilize. We also need to thank our PIO, Kathy Cummings, who provided us with press coverage of the final drill where we used an application translator to better reach the needs of English as second language speakers. So greatly appreciate that. And to our firefighter, Kevin Grimstad, and the fire department for their support of this program as well. It is incredibly important that we reach the whole community. And what you will see in this class are young people and middle-aged people and considerably more middle-aged people who have dedicated their time and their effort to serve our community. So for each one of them, they will begin here in alphabetical order. They'll go through SHAKE. They'll accept the certificate there. And then we'll leave, and we will go down to our magnificent new emergency operation centers, which we need to thank you and our city leaders for. So, Christopher Arts from Finn Hill. Barbara Braywick from Mount Lake Terrace. Brett Buchanan from Juanita. Tina Clark from Everest? You couldn't decide what neighborhood you were in. You're in at Everest, Houghton, Moss Bay. She just didn't decide where she wanted to be. Rod Graham from Juanita. Scott Green from Bothell. Elizabeth Garcia, who works in Kirkland. Karen Hartman from North Juanita. Mary Jane Jones from North Juanita. Stephanie Klein from Finn Hill. Siya Ko from Moss Bay. Cindy Linder from Bridal Trails. Robert Marshall from Moss Bay. John Polsons from Highlands. Graham Rowan from North Rose Hill. Grace Waweru from Totem Lake. And Jordan is not with us. Thank you kindly for your support, and we'll see you next year for 23.
Thank you all for making our community safer. We appreciate you. The next item on our agenda is the consent calendar. Before we have a motion, I'd like to ask Councilmember Marchione to present the audit of accounts.
Okay, we had payroll of $2,850,266.14 and bills of $5,391,219.90.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Thank you. Second. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet to approve the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Mr. Nixon.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just wanted to make note of one item on the consent agenda that excites me and that is that we're putting out or awarding the bid mm-hmm. on the south parking lot project at City Hall.
Yes.
And I think this is excellent that not only are we getting this done, but I think the bids came in way lower than the engineering estimate, so it's always nice to get things done for less than we expected. And I hope that we have plans to publicize the fact that this project is kicking off, because I know there's going to be a lot of people in the community that are excited about having another 88 parking spaces available for downtown. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Yes, we will.
Other comments? Mr. Asher.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. On the December 13th minutes, there's an item, let's see if I can find the correct number. Yeah, it's page 20. It indicates a vote on the process for selecting a council member, and it does indicate six council members, although seven were present, only six voted. And I think we just need to indicate that Councilmember Klobuchar recused herself.
So can we still vote on the consent calendar?
Yes.
Excellent. We'll make that. Other comments? Sure. Thank you very much. There's an ordinance. I'm going to ask Ms. Anderson to call the roll, please.
Councilmember Nixon?
Aye.
Councilmember Pascal?
Aye.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Aye.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. The consent calendar is approved. The next item on our agenda is item 11. It's unfinished business. It's a resolution amending the timeline relating to the planning and land use recommendation of the Kirkland Planning Commission regarding Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center. City Manager.
All right. Thank you very much. So we don't have a formal presentation on this. The thrust of the resolution is simply to extend the time that the Planning Commission would make a recommendation to the full council to April 30th.
Thank you. Ms. Marchione.
I will move for approval resolution number 5231, amending the timeline of resolution R5208 relating to planning and land use and accepting the recommendation from the Kirkland Planning Commission to defer action on the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center Citizens Amendment request until the completion of the comprehensive plan.
Second.
Madam Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Sorry. Just, I wanted to also say that there is an accompanying small increase in the budget for the consultants to extend the time since they'll be going in for another 3 months as well. So I want to make sure that was highlighted as well.
Thank you, but that's contained in the resolution.
That's
correct?
Contained in the resolution.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Marchione, seconded by Councilmember Asher to approve resolution 5231. Discussion. Mr. Pascal.
Thank you. So one of the things I had to do a couple weeks ago was sign the ethics memo, and part of that has to deal with this subject this evening, whereas I wanted to be open and transparent in the fact that my business, that which I'm a part owner, is involved in this in the 6th Street Corridor Study, which is part of the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Study. Now, what's before us today is an extension of the schedule and a budget amendment. That budget amendment in no way impacts our company's involvement and or budget or any financial incentive. So I wanted to just acknowledge that, but I feel that I can participate in this process.
Thank you very much. Mr. Arnold.
The other thing that I would note is I know this is a project where there have been many neighborhood discussions via over the fall, and one new development that has happened is discussions by property owners, including the PCC grocery store. And I think this is part of, as that conversation continues, really highlights what's at stake when we're looking at the neighborhood plan and the importance of a neighborhood grocery store. And I think it's important, given the recommendation of our planning commission, to give them more time to complete their work, even though I do want to continue to push for a resolution in getting here. I do think we're making progress, and this extension is appropriate.
Thank you. Other comments? Thank you. It was moved by Councilmember Marchione and seconded by Councilmember Asher to approve Resolution 5231, amending the timeline. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. Thank you very much. Resolution 5231 is approved. The next item on our agenda is item 13 at City Council Regional and Committee Reports. Would you like to make a report, Mr. Nixon?
Sure. A couple of things but that aren't regional committees. I did want to acknowledge the fact that we had, before Christmas, our Kirkland Nourishing Network Food Box Day for the Christmas break. And in that, we served over 170 families. It was the greatest number of families ever served. And I think that the Councilmember Nasher and I are involved, but others are deeply committed and make it happen. And we really appreciate their service to the neediest amongst our community. I also wanted to make sure we mention that we have styrofoam recycling this Saturday at the Public Works Center. But in terms of regional committees, next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, is the first Sound Cities Association Public Issues Committee meeting of the year. And we did previously distribute a summary of the agenda. The packet won't come out till tomorrow, but I don't expect it to change much. There's not really anything that we need to take a position on. The only action item on the agenda is setting the PIC meeting schedule for 2017. But they will be discussing the legislative priorities as one of the discussion items. And I got a call from SCA staff today asking, you know, how much does Kirkland really want to push to get our PRA priorities included in the SCA priorities? And so I didn't really have a clear answer for them. I know that we would love to have the rest of SCA join us in supporting our three items. I think the middle one of the three, having to do with having like default charges for copying of electronic records, I'm confident that SCA will support that one. The other two, about non-appointed volunteer records disclosure and capping of penalty awards under the PRA, I think are less likely to be supported by SCA broadly. And mainly it's because, and again, this will come out in the discussion at the PIC meeting, I think that the inclination is to focus on what AWC is setting as their priorities, which is alternative dispute resolution and electronic records copying charges. And it's basically the output of the PRA stakeholder group that's met this summer and fall. So hopefully you're okay with me just kind of seeing how the discussion evolves at the PIC meeting in terms of what happens. Now, of course, that depends entirely on whether you appoint me as the city's PIC representative for 2017. And as you know, Councilmember Kloba was our alternate on PIC. And so I think that's something that we may want to consider in this the next discussion about committee assignments, is also to look at our PIC representatives for 2017.
Agreed. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Mr. Asher.
I'd like to follow up on that. Would it be worth a special presentation on the, particularly, the volunteer protection? Because to me, if you understand that situation, mm-hmm. it's a slam dunk. Would it be worth someone from the city going down and making a special pitch for that?
Well, I did do a half-hour discussion with Ellie from SCA staff, and we focused almost entirely on that.
Okay.
So I feel comfortable being able to explain it okay. to the PIC.
Good.
My only concern is how many different PRA-related things does SCA want to focus on? I haven't seen the rest of the packet, which will contain the legislative priorities of all the other cities in SCA. And what Ellie told me is that all of them talk about some PRA-related thing, but they don't all talk about the same thing. And so what it might be a matter of trying to identify the two or three things that are most commonly mentioned across all the cities, as opposed to trying to argue for any individual point that any one city is interested in. But I'll make my best effort to get it considered, if I'm your representative.
Appreciate it.
I have a feeling you might be. Mr. Pascal, do you have anything to report?
I would just say, in terms of community events, my first official day in office was January 1st, and I decided to plunge right in and join the Polar Bear Club in downtown Kirkland. That was my very first time, and it actually was not as cold as I thought it would be. But it was great to see so many people out and about that's a morning. So.
Very brave. Thank you. Mr. Asher.
You must have had great fears then, if it wasn't as cold as you thought it. The only thing I would like to report is the Regional Transit Committee did in fact pass the strategic plan and the long-range plan for the Metro King County Transit with the key provision that they will try to develop a better crosswalk. In fact, it's going to require another document. Every time they tried to tell us, well, here's how you get from here to here to here, they had to go through an extensive discussion, and which meant that they couldn't tell us how to get from here to here to here, and nothing like a transit agency not being able to do that. So they're going to try to put together a crosswalk and make the plans harmonize more closely. And since Metro Transit is our transit agency for the next 35 years, we want them to be successful.
Thank you. Ms. Marcioni?
No report.
Ms. Sweet?
No report.
Mr. Arnold?
No report.
Thank you very much. And I have no report. So, shall we move on? Are you going to help guide us through the council committee appointment discussion? City manager.
Thank you. So traditionally, what the council has done now in their policies and procedures is the mayor and the deputy mayor make a recommendation to the full council for the back on the council appointment process, right?
Yes.
Before this goes up. So with Councilmember Kloba resigning, every council member should have at their desk a list of the current appointments to committees. And we highlighted in yellow the ones that Councilmember Kloba formerly held. These would now be vacant. So what you've traditionally done is got input from the council on whether anyone wants to make a change or has any additional committees they'd like to be on or any that they want to get off. Once you hear from everybody, then the mayor and the deputy mayor make a recommendation to the full council at the next meeting, January 17th, which would then be adopted by motion by the council. So what we're looking for today is just if anyone has something they would like to express to the mayor or the deputy mayor about any potential changes.
Yes, Mr. Pascal, then Mr. Asher.
So looking at the committee assignments, I would say that I'd be very interested in filling Shelley's seat on the Public Works, Parks, and Human Services, and then also on the City and School District Coordinating. Those are two subjects that I know I'm very interested in and would be happy to participate in those committees.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Asher.
I've had enough fun on the Eastside Transportation Partnership for 15 years and would gladly relinquish that seat, and it comes with free coffee and cakes early in the morning in Bellevue.
Is that an automatic seat for Kirkland? We get to appoint it?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have two positions, and Jay is the other seat.
Mr. Arnold?
I'd also like to get direction from the council. I see we have a number of alternates on the regional committees that we don't have members on, that we provide a slate of alternates when we come back with this. And so Doesn't have to be this evening, but if you could send some email if you're interested in serving as an alternate. ETP and the Eastside Rail Corridor Regional Advisory Council, the RAC, are both boards that Kirkland has a seat by statute, and I just would not want to lose our voting power if we had a conflict of the appointed members.
Yeah, I thought I was your alternate on the RAC.
We have two seats, so you are one. Seats. You are one alternate.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're the alternate on. You're the alternate on ETP.
Hmm. I thought I was on the RAC too. I'm going to put myself down for that, unless someone else wants it.
Okay.
Where's Doris?
You got it. No, you got it.
Arnestly for it. Others? Ms. Marcioni.
Yeah, I've had a problem this past year making the committee meeting for the Cascade Water. Now, Penny, you went on that committee, though, didn't you, that I was on? The Finance Committee? Yeah. So I don't know if somebody else would like to volunteer, at least to be Penny's alternate if she needs somebody to attend for her, which is rare. Mm-hmm. So if anybody would be interested in doing that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, so members can give that some thought and send us emails, and we will bring back some recommendations. Yes, sir, Mr. Nixon.
Do we have the ability to appoint an alternate on the EMS Advisory Task Force?
No.
No.
Oh, yeah, we might. I mean, I don't know why not.
Yeah, we have a statutory position there, so
right.
I would think
I'll check. Yeah,
I think we should.
So I would just say if they do allow you to designate an alternate, you know, if the member is not available, I'd be happy to be Penny's alternate on that one.
Great. Thank you. All right, we'll bring back
one other thing.
Yes, ma'am.
With our regional appointments, I'm looking for Regional Water Quality Committee. I don't see it.
Those are SCA appointments.
Okay. All right.
In that process, one of the things that, John, you missed by not having an earlier vacancy is the Sound Cities regional appointments. But I would recommend that if you have particular interests, you go and start attending the meetings. That would put you in good stead for an appointment next year.
Yeah, that's an important clarification. What we only put on here was committees that the city got to decide who their representative was. So the other regional committees that we don't decide, we didn't include on this list.
So if I could just get a clarification. So all these that are listed on this page under regional committees, we have a guaranteed seat on that we need to fill.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Okay. Madam Mayor, I'd also like to make note of the fact that Councilmember Kloba has been serving on the Disability Board. I don't think we've really mentioned that yet. That's not a burdensome assignment. It's every other month for about a half hour. So, but we do need, that's a statutory requirement that there be two council members on that board. So we do need to have someone fill that position.
I'll put myself down for that one.
Okay.
And I'm going to put myself down for the Cascade Water and Eastside Transportation and the RAC. And
then we just
need someone for, I have to keep up with you. Mr. Arnold.
Before Councilmember Kloba was appointed as the RIA 8 yes. representative, I have that position. I'd be willing to take it up again if there wasn't other interest, and I'll leave it open until the mayor and I's committee meeting if there's other interest that someone wants to take
here,
that on.
Because we still need someone for the Eastside Human Services Forum. All right. Thank you very much. We will bring back a recommendation, and if you have any thoughts in the meantime, please do email. So that is...
We do need our PEC rep an alternate PEC tonight.
I'd entertain a motion to appoint Councilmember Nixon.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to appoint Councilmember Nixon as the Sound Cities Association Public Issues Committee representative for the City of Kirkland. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Thank you. Councilmember Nixon is appointed. And we will probably bring back a recommendation about an alternate for you at the next meeting.
Yeah, it's not urgent. Just so you know, I'm only looking forward to my calendar for this year. It looks like I'm only going to have to miss one meeting. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And then, okay. So that is what we needed to do there? Okay, excellent.
That's all we need from that one.
So we're going to move on to the city manager's report.
All right, so first up, the only presentation that we have tonight is one slide, and I'm making the presentation, but thank you to Marilyn for putting it up for me. So this is in your memo you received is the draft retreat topics. These are based on previous conversations throughout the year and the budget process. So obviously to make sure that you have all the information you need, by February 3rd, we want to try to nail down as much as possible what you'd like to see on the agenda. So the draft agenda right now would be a big focus on the work program, making sure that we get that completely laid out, what you'd like. That would then be brought back for council action at the February 17th council meeting. We have the housing strategy plan, which is part of the comp plan, but it's also been obviously a key priority for the council. How do we get more affordable housing and special needs housing? And so we thought that probably deserved a good discussion because our recommendation is that we create a citizen task force that will then be working with us for about 6 months. So we thought that would be a good thing to spend some time on at the retreat. In the budget, you gave us the resources to create a full-time human services commission, and there was a lot of questions about what we would do with that, how it would work. And so we recommended that that might be a good topic, as well as the wonderful proclamation we issued today about creating an inclusive and welcoming community. The council wanted to make sure that we didn't just say something, we actually tried to create an action plan. So we have that as a potential one. And then finally, this is the policy meeting retreat, we always have what we call the council potpourri discussion, where Marilyn facilitates a discussion of other policy issues, where you can then have the infamous dot decision about how many you want to see go forward. So if there's a lot of topics you want to talk about tonight, that might be something that would just fall under the council potpourri section, or if there's a specific one that the council wants to see added, we're just looking for direction tonight about are there any major missing topics from the retreat.
Mr. Pascal. Mr. Arnold.
One of the topics that I'm very interested in is with the recent passage of ST3 in November, it does have some investments in our community in the short term, namely the bus rapid transit along 405, and there's still a lot of questions about that. So given this is a two-year work program, I think it's pretty critical that we try to get ahead of that as best we can. And so I think I'd like to consider it be a major focus. And that would be one that I would recommend adding.
Thank you. So we'll add that to the list.
Okay.
Yes. Mr. Arnold and Ms. Sweet.
Yeah, I was in support of that as well as a specific named item on our work program. I think that we need to, I think we are going to devote city resources, and I think there may be some policy decisions that will need to come before council on getting that implemented right.
Thank you. Ms. Sweet.
Well, I've actually got a few things to do in the potpourri, but those can wait for the potpourri. But one that I think might need a little pre-work is our, I don't know how to put it, but as we move forward with the solid waste planning, we have a window of probably a year to 2 years as we do the demand management strategy around Houghton. So I think that needs to become more of a priority in our discussion in terms of both how to get public comment or public outreach in terms of what people are willing to accept and just a bargaining position in terms of that landfill, because I believe that that landfill could potentially work into our housing strategy. So maybe there's some pre-work we can do just in terms of, I don't know, moving the shells around.
Okay. So, and I'm going to talk. Council interested in seeing something?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's an important topic, I think. I attended a
roundtable discussion about the problem of opioid addiction and leading into heroin addiction, and there's communities across King County doing various types of work on raising awareness and what are we doing. And I don't know, I'm definitely going to bring it up during the potpourri, but I don't know if there's any advance work that can be done, but there's a call to action by the mayors of Auburn and Renton, various actions that cities can take, and I would be interested in having the council at least have that list at the retreat so that we could decide if that's something we're interested in putting resources towards. And then I also want to talk about, it's not my idea, but one of my colleagues' idea of having an informal discussion forum for the council and city manager, some staff, some more often than just an annual retreat, just perhaps a noticed, I don't know what that would look like exactly, but there must be a way for us to be able to talk to each other in an open and transparent way, but still have a casual conversation. Those are the items on my mind. Mr. Nixon.
So
what about civil asset forfeiture?
Well, I'm going to talk about that. So I actually have in front of me a list of about a half a dozen things that I had been thinking about talking about during the calendaring session tonight and getting assigned to council committees tonight. But I actually think I may just wait till the retreat and bring them up during the potpourri session, as long as we have an understanding that anything we bring up during that section of the retreat is eligible to be referred to a committee immediately. I think that's our intent, right? So rather than take a lot of time talking about justification for these things tonight, I think I'll just say I'll bring these up during the potpourri section. But I did email you all about this kind of long-term concern that I've had about our state and federal laws regarding civil asset forfeiture. And I would like us to consider what the city's policy on that should be and whether this should be a city where we take people's property when they haven't been convicted of any crime. But I'll wait for the discussion on that until the retreat.
So it sounds as if we'll have a lively discussion during council delivery.
Is there anything on this current list that I put up that you would like to take off, or are you all good with what's already there?
Looks good to me.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, so what I'll do is bring up back a final for the council on January 17th. You can make final edits there as well, and then that will be then the retreat agenda for February 3rd.
So.
Okay. Thank you. So that's all we have on that topic. Then calendar update, first of the year, but is there anything the council wishes to add to the calendar?
I think we're okay.
All right, and I don't actually have a report since I just got back from vacation, so other than the retreat topics.
I should have brought this up during reports. I hope you'll allow me. I received an email over the break from former Mayor Bill Wood's family that he had taken a fall outside of his new home and that he has had been injured. He's all right, but that the sidewalk was dangerous. And I was very happy, and I wanted to thank you so much, Kathy. You and your team rushed out and put barricades up and made sure it was marked and are taking action to make sure that that sidewalk is safe. And I wanted to thank you for that.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll pass that along to the crew who responded. Thanks.
Thank you. I know it's hard over the holiday, but that was quick action. Yes, sir.
You know, I did forget I had one city manager
report.
Too
late. Darn it. No, just a joke. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you. So I had an opportunity. The mayor had a bit of an emergency, so I got to fill in for her in a meeting with the Kirkland Arts Center. Also with Claudia Balducci from the King County Council and John McBride from the state. And there's been a long-going conversation with the City Council about seismic funding for the Kirkland Arts Center. So the Kirkland Arts Center has finally completed their analysis, and they have basically a three-phased seismic report, which they now have given us as a draft. And the seismic report has as much as $800,000 worth of work that can be done They raised about $200,000 of their own. So the conversation we had was about whether the city, this county, and the state could chip in. And it was a very promising conversation where we thought we could maybe tackle two of the three phases. The last one's the most expensive. But in the past, the council has talked about whether or not you wanted to set up to maybe up to as much as $50,000 of the council contingency towards this. Claudia Balducci said she thought if the city could do something like that, she thought it might be possible for the county to do some as much as $100,000, but she has to go through her process at the county as well. So the question for the council is this something you'd like to refer back to the Planning and Economic Development Committee where the discussion happened in the past with a recommendation to be brought back to the full council in the next couple of meetings?
Mr. Arnold?
I would also note that the Planning and Economic Development Committee will meet before our next council meeting, so it would give us an opportunity to make a recommendation if people were in support of referring it.
Supportive of referring it? Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Nixon?
I was just looking at my list and had something that I thought we might want to discuss. It's very quick, and that is that July 4th is on a Tuesday, and it would be our meeting night this year, and I wondered if we might want to consider deciding now to change that meeting to July 5th.
Yes, please. Thank you. Good catch. All right.
Thank you. That's all I have. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you very much. All right. Then the next item on our agenda is items from the audience, right? It is 5 till 9. This is an additional time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for public hearing on our agenda. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than 3 people speak on any one subject. However, if both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to 3 proponents and 3 opponents may address the council. This additional items from the audience will not exceed 15 minutes, and speakers who have not yet addressed the council will be given priority. Is there anyone who wishes to address the council at this time? Well, thank you very much for sticking with us till the end, because seeing none, I'm going to declare this items from the audience period closed. Wish you all a very happy new year and say that we are adjourned. Thank you. Yay. Welcome, Mr. Pascal.